This is Kathy coming to you with the Pantograph from Bloomington Normal, starting out with the front page today, which is March 24th. Anything that's fun to do. Tall ceilings arch over the main room of the Atchison, a live events and wedding venue at 1611 Morrissey Avenue, Unit 2 in Bloomington. Atchison Super Versatile Entertainment Event Venue by Brendan Dennison. New management at a South Bloomington events venue is heating up its spring calendar with a fresh slate of events and rental offerings. The Atchison at 1611 Morrissey Drive Unit 2 in Bloomington changed hands in August. Formerly called Venue 309, the space situated on the south side of the Station Saloons building has been rebranded with the train theme. Philip Cade, who is also executive chef for Event Management, Dining, and Hospitality at Illinois State University, said he and several unnamed investors bought the Morrissey Drive business. Cade of Normal said he got into the events business because he had been consulting for the previous owner until Venue 309 went up for sale. Cade said the Atchison has hosted around 20 events since he took over, and those bookings include several weddings scheduled into 2026. The venue features 8,000 square feet of the main room and has a stage area and plenty of parking, he said. Capacity in the space is approved for up to 500, and seating is available for about 250. Changes to the events venue include a fresh coat of paint, new tables, and a spruced-up bar. The Atchison hosted its first event in October, and Cade said a grand opening is still in the works. Upcoming public events include live concerts next month, a Kentucky Derby party in early May, and outdoor wrestling matches July 19th. Cade has also been working with Normal-based country musician Marcos Mendez for booking live music. The new name is a reference to a former railroad line, the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railway. Cade noted a country song honoring that railway has just been covered by numerous artists, including John Denver and Judy Garland. When you look around this whole area right here, when it was originally built, it was the slab, and it was a trucking company, said Cade. We tried to fit into that whole transportation theme. In addition to entertainment and dining events, the Atchison is also offering event space for special gatherings like weddings, quinceañeras, two bar and bat mitzvahs, sorority formals, and celebrations of life. Basically, every and anything that's something fun to do entertainment-wise, said Cade. It's a big open building. Looks like you could fit a lot of people in there. On the front page, this next headline, efforts underway to restore a crumbling site where Abraham Lincoln began his political rise, by Addison Wright from the Chicago Tribune. In 1831, Abraham Lincoln arrived at the New Salem Grist Mill along the Sangamon River aboard a flatboat that was sinking. Lincoln had been hired by a man named Denton Offutt to deliver the boat cargo to New Orleans. As the story goes, Offutt was so impressed by Lincoln's quick thinking to rescue the boat and save the cargo that he offered him a job at a shop he planned to open in New Salem. Lincoln returned from the cargo trip and decided to stay in New Salem, about 20 miles northwest of Springfield. By the time Lincoln left the town in 1837, he was a state legislator and his political career was taking off. While New Salem was essentially abandoned in the years after Lincoln departed for Springfield and then Washington, D.C., it was reconstructed during the 1930s as a historic site that last year attracted almost 400,000 visitors. But time has taken a toll on the state's effort to memorialize Lincoln in the town where he developed his political chops. Lincoln's New Salem State Historic Site has fallen into disrepair as the tab for deferred maintenance on properties managed by the Illinois Department of Natural Resources has grown to an estimated $1 billion statewide, according to IDNR spokesperson J. Ed Bolinski. In recent years, the roofs of two structures have caved in. The grist mill, where townspeople would grind wheat into flour, is closed, with boards across the entryway. There are holes in the wooden entrance ramp, and the mill's drive shaft, which powered the structure, has been inoperable since a 2016 flood. Gina Gilmore Walter, president of the New Salem Lincoln League, said it's unsafe for school children to walk along the road or over the closed pedestrian bridge to reach the mill. When responsibility for the site, along with all other state historic sites, was shifted to the IDNR from the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency in 2017, New Salem stopped getting $200,000 annually from the state capital fund. At the same time, IDNR was suffering from almost two decades of disinvestment, Bolinski said. However, efforts are underway to restore New Salem. IDNR announced this week that the site will receive about $8 million in funding for improvements from the Rebuild Illinois Capital Plan for Improvements. The site has received a total of about $3 million in capital funding since Governor J.B. Pritzker took office in 2019. In addition, Republican State Senator Steve McClure, who represents the area, is leading a bipartisan legislative effort to rehabilitate the site in coordination with the New Salem-Lincoln League. Legislation made up of three separate bills would create a New Salem Preservation Commission under IDNR to assess the site and provide a budget to fix the structures. The measure would also create a procurement exception because of the difficulty to find tradespeople with construction skills similar to those used in the 1830s that are needed to properly rebuild the structures. According to Republican Representative Wayne Rosenthal, the legislation's House sponsor, IDNR estimates that it will cost $19 million to rehabilitate the site, far higher than the $5 million specified in the legislation. An amendment will be added to update this cost, according to McClure, along with other amendments to require IDNR to conduct an immediate assessment of the site and report back to the General Assembly within 30 days. The department does not support the creation of a preservation commission as laid out in the legislation, saying in a statement that doing so would create an unnecessary layer of bureaucracy and red tape. However, it has offered to enter into a friend's arrangements with the Lincoln League, which would help meet our shared goals without creating undue additional bureaucracy, the statement said. McClure said he thinks the IDNR is concerned if the New Salem site is fully funded, IDNR would have to provide similar help to every other site it oversees. Well, in my view, New Salem is the most important state historic site, McClure said. This site, where Lincoln's whole political career began, has sort of just fallen into the abyss, and we've got to protect it. McClure said the grist mill where Lincoln first arrived is the project's top priority. The shape it's in is pretty urgent, McClure said during a recent tour of the site, pointing to a splintered piece of loose wood. I mean, look at this. That's a safety hazard. If that's what we're doing to maybe one of the most important structures in the village, why even have the site open? He asked. The mill is largely inaccessible. The pedestrian bridge that connects the structure, located down the hill from the town and over a highway, is closed. New stairs were added about a year ago, but they stop halfway down the hill. Gilmore Walter said the area isn't safe for school field trips. You're going to have to make some kind of parking that's got a guardrail that's safe for kids on school trips to access this, because they tore out the stairs that came to this, and you can see the new stairs, but they blocked them off, Gilmore Walters said. They're like the stairs that go nowhere. The roofs on two structures, the Trent Barn, which is owned by the ferry operator Alexander Trent, and the carding mill, where townspeople would card or comb wool from their sheep, have also collapsed. The carding mill is the only animal-powered carding mill in the United States, according to Gilmore Walter. When she visited the site as a kid in the 1970s and 80s, there were oxen powering the mill. In Lincoln's time, people in the town would shear their sheep, wash the fleece, and card the wool using the mill. Then it would be straightened and spun into thread and yarn. This is the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, when we started taking that process out of the home, where people would sit for a week to card the same amount of wool that you could take there and have it done in a few hours, Gilmore Walters said. The roofs were damaged from exposure to moisture, which led to deterioration and rot. Now that the roofs are gone, that will speed the same process for the rest of the structure, Rosenthal said. When you lose the roof, then the other logs stay wet all the time. They're going to deteriorate, Rosenthal said. This is going to continue on this building, and you're going to see this continue to the all structures here. Unless they're properly repaired and taken care of right now, they're not. The site has 7 employees, and Rosenthal said a bigger staff is needed to help manage and maintain the park, which also includes a campground and trails. Gilmore Walter said she remembers when the site was bustling with period reenactments. You would come through here and there would be people dipping candles. There would be people making soap. There would be people cooking over the open fires. The blacksmith would be hammering in the blacksmith shop, Gilmore Walter said. McClure said the state's introductory video has not been working for the past few months, despite investments in the new equipment by the New Salem Lincoln League. That's pathetic, McClure said of the video not working. This is where President Abraham Lincoln, one of the most famous people to ever live, started his career in politics, and you can't even watch the introductory video. The Lincoln League and the Abraham Lincoln Association led an effort in 2019 to request state funding for repairs, but they didn't file any legislation, and the COVID-19 pandemic ended the effort, according to Gilmore Walter. McClure expects continued bipartisan support for his legislation, which has backing from at least two Chicago Democrats, Senator Bill Cunningham and Senator Robert Peters. In addition to its historical importance, the site provides a boost to the small town of Petersburg, just to the north, said David Blanchett, a local journalist who has been involved in area museums, including the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. Blanchett said the site is very peaceful. There are tree-lined pathways that you can walk down, Blanchett said. There's a lot of economic impact, too, when tourists come to the community and spend money at restaurants and gas stations and convenience stores and overnight lodging, and that translates into jobs and revenue for the community. New Salem attracted 359,950 visitors to the community in 2024 and 374,418 visitors in 2023, according to Belinsky. For others who grew up in the area, it provides a direct connection to the past. Gilmore Walter learned that her great-great-great-great-uncle, Alexander Ferguson, was Lincoln's shoe cobbler in the town. They're not just names on a page anymore. They become real people with a story, so that's the motivating factor for me, she said. Candidates at Bloomington Normal NAACP Forum make a last push before the April 1st election. Bloomington. Entering the final campaign days of the consolidated election, candidates for offices in the Twin Cities gave their latest pitches Saturday to constituents at a forum hosted by the Bloomington Normal NAACP at the Bloomington Public Library. Early voting has already begun ahead of Election Day on April 1st. Featured candidates included those running in Normal Township for Supervisor, Clerk and Trustee, Heartland Community College Board of Trustees, Bloomington City Council, and mayors for both the town and the city. Three candidates running for Bloomington City Council were in attendance, Benjamin Zimmerman and Jenna Kearns for Ward 1, and Abby Scott for Ward 9. Roger Bedecker, who is also running for Ward 9, was not present. The superintendents from Bloomington District 87 and McLean County Unit 5 also presented in favor of the proposed 1% county facility sales tax that would fund needed school projects. Chad Burke and Crystal Abel were invited to share why they would be the best fit for Normal Township Supervisor. Dana Schinkeldance and Carla Sila made their pitches to become the next Normal Township Clerk. Several candidates for Normal Township Trustee were invited to speak, including Floyd Aper, Mary Cottier, Nicoya Griffiths, Dalen Heil Broad, Randall Schaub, Tanner Starr, Natasha Syed, and Ron Ulmer. Three candidates for Heartland Community College Trustee spoke as well, including Laurie Berkner, Janet Hood, and Thomas Witt. Candidate David Seltzer was not president. The mayoral seat for both the town and the city are at stake on April 1st, and the three candidates for each seat were asked a variety of questions on housing, water quality, and social issues like diversity, equity, and inclusion. Those running for Bloomington mayor are incumbent Maboka Milwilambe, former state representative Dan Brady, and current Bloomington Ward 6 alderman Cody Hendricks. Normal mayor candidates are incumbent Chris Coos and Normal Town Council members Shemberly Harris and Kathleen Lorenz. Only one prompt was worded the same to both groups of candidates. Fill in the blank. President Trump, you need to start blank and stop blank. In order of appearance, here were their answers. Well, Will Lombie said, I'm very concerned about what is happening in the country right now with the slew of executive orders. It's not just impacting us in Bloomington, it's impacting us at Illinois State University where I work. He also mentioned the recent judicial stopgaps that have slowed down Trump's efforts to expedite deportations and mass firings in federal agencies. Mulwambe said he has worked with the Illinois Municipal League and the National League of Cities to see how to be better prepared and to meet any potential effects from the federal government. Brady said the idea that because somebody's political party scares somebody, intimidates somebody, should not be the case at all. This is a race that is nonpartisan. Brady said he wants to be an advocate for Bloomington and let officials in Washington, D.C. handle matters in the Capitol. When it comes to things in Washington, D.C., we have elected officials that represent us that I have worked with over the years. We work with those officials. Whoever is in the presidency, I respect the office, he said. Hendricks said, I'll just be frank. I'm a high school government teacher, so I would say, Mr. President, I need you to start educating yourself, and I need you to stop dismantling our democracy. Hendricks said he teaches the U.S. Constitution in his classes. I think it's the most important part of my job. And I have students who are asking, wait a second, is that constitutional? Wait a second, how could Trump do this? And it's a really difficult time to answer those questions, Hendricks said. Hendricks said the rapid changes in the executive branch are unprecedented and, in my mind, dangerous. Yeah, the president is off there, but very much what happens there can come here. It's easy to put us off and say it's in D.C. and this is Bloomington, but they are very much interconnected. Coos said, Mr. President, I need you to come down from your ivory tower and look at what's happening in your communities across the United States and deal with real foundational issues of what's happening. Diversity, inclusion, and equity are not what's killing this country. The lack of respect for people in this country is what's killing this country, and you, sir, are standing for that. We at the local level, at the state level, do not stand for that. Lauren said, start governing, stop sowing discord. Harris said she would pose to the president what she tells other legislators with whom she's worked. Stop the divisiveness, but start having empathy. She said the issues facing American communities are outside the realm of Democratic or Republican. Nobody cares if there's a D or an R on our water. Nobody cares if a D or an R is on our potholes. Nobody cares if a D or an R is on the vehicles that's coming to save our lives. We need to remove these things and find a way to be truly one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all, she said. Access to affordable, adequate housing and finding a way to help homeless people in the community were at the top of every mayoral candidate's list. Milwambe and Hendricks both said changes to zoning provisions could provide some relief. Rehabilitation on some areas, properties that are abandoned as well, properties that need a little bit more love, Milwambe said. Hendricks said the city is long past due to address the issue. We've got 1,000 properties that are not online for housing right now, so we need to find ways to incentivize through reduction in property taxes, he said. Brady said he would look at incentivizing investors and builders to come to Bloomington Normal, but that housing needs to be attainable first and foremost. Affordable means affordable. We cannot build housing that people can't afford. What good is that? How's that going to attack the problem, he said. Coos said the housing issues run deeper than surface level. It's a structural housing issue that has to do with affordability. It has to do with availability, he said, and that's not a switch that you turn on and off. This is a structural problem that is going to take a lot of collaboration at the state, local, and federal level between communities, Bloomington and Normal, working together. Loren said the town and the city need to work together, but action is needed. We can't just wring our hands and wait for the structural problem to fix itself. For instance, interest rates, he said. I'm the only candidate that has been endorsed by the realtors because I've been sitting and listening with them about what's going on at the market level. Harris said she's been working with the National League of Cities to bring in inspectors for rental units, but there are things that we need to do, and I'm committed. I've already started having the conversations and doing the work to ensure that those who rent in our community have healthy and safe housing, she said. The candidates for Bloomington mayor were asked to if they had spoken with people in the community who are homeless. Milwambe said, I have visited the tent encampment again. It was something that it kind of brings tears to your eyes. It's a very difficult issue for the whole community. Milwambe said his office has provided a letter of support to Home Sweet Home Ministries and that he supports the agency's proposed cabin village that would be a non-congregate shelter for the unhoused. On one of his visits, Brady said someone living in tents recognized him. He said, Dan, I remember when you used to come into our shop where I worked before I fell on hard times. We had a very nice visit, and I learned that not everybody in those particular situations are individuals that are there because they've gotten a type of addiction, a problem, or any other problem. What they need is a leg up, not a handout, he said. Brady also reminded voters that before the winter, he proposed sheltering the unhoused in city-owned buildings. That proposal talked about temporarily using a facility that was just purchased by the city of Bloomington for over $5.5 million to get people inside before the cold hits, he said. Now that's leadership, ladies and gentlemen. Hendricks said he also supports SHM's plan to build a non-congregate shelter, but Bloomington needs to work with Normal to more fully address homelessness. We need to find ways to expand our services and our social safety net to be able to support those individuals, he said. And also, we need to tackle the housing issues so that the unhoused have availability of housing to be able to move into. In her closing remarks, Harris said she has been physically active in making housing available. I put on the work gloves, the work boots. I help build houses through Habitat for Humanity's Women Build. I've done the ground level work for this community. I've truly served, and this is an opportunity for me to serve it in a different way, she said. Eureka Soldier promoted to Lieutenant Colonel. Jacob Beard of Eureka was recently promoted to Lieutenant Colonel during a ceremony held Saturday, March 15th at Heartland Community College in Normal. Beard is officer in charge of the 40th Maneuver Enhancement Brigade, which is headquartered in Normal. He enlisted in the U.S. Army Reserves, and after graduating basic training at Fort Leonard Wood in Missouri, he became a cadet with the Western Illinois University Reserve Officer Training Corps program, according to the news release. He then transferred to the Illinois Army National Guard's 233rd Military Police Company in 2006, where he was a platoon leader after commissioning from the WIU ROTC program in 2007. Over his 20 years of military service, Bill held various staff leadership assignments through the Illinois Army National Guard, including platoon leader and executive officer in the 233 Military Police Company, an assistant operations officer for the 2nd Battalion and 123rd Field Artillery Regiment during a 2010 deployment to Sinai, Egypt. Upon returning from deployment, Beard briefly served as a staff officer for the 33rd Military Police Battalion before he became commander, the news release said. He served as the Illinois National Guard Provost Marshal until he became officer in charge for the 33rd MP Battalion in 2016. He served in a variety of staff roles within the battalion before he was selected as the Brigade Training Officer for the 404th MEB in Normal. During his time as a training officer, he coordinated the brigade's response to the COVID-19 pandemic in addition to civil unrest, according to the news release. He deployed with headquarters and headquarters company, the 404th MEB, to Djibouti, Africa, where he served as Deputy Director of Crisis and Future Operations for Combined Joint Task Force, Horn of Africa. Following his second deployment, he was assigned as Chief of the Assistance and Investigations Branch within the Illinois National Guard's Office of the Inspector General, where he served in 2024. Beard said in the news release that the top three things he learned as a company commander were clarity of communication, building a team with your non-commissioned officer, and learning not to take things seriously all the time. He has also learned time is one of the most precious things leaders have, according to a news release. Additionally, he said he couldn't have accomplished these achievements without his wife, kids, parents, and with those that he has served. 100 years ago, Decatur is growing jealous of Bloomington's highways. March 24, 1925. Decatur is growing jealous of Bloomington. Comparison being made in the review between 7 hard roads out of Bloomington either completed or in this year's construction program, but 4 out of Decatur. 75 years ago, on March 24, 1950, first spring work this week on a score of farms in the Bloomington area will be planting of young pine trees and multiflora row sprouts for hedge fences, says C.E. Mick, District Conservation Service Operator Supervisor. On Thursday, March the 23rd, a truck brought 2,000 Virginia pine seedlings and 40,000 of the multiflora row sprouts to Bloomington from the SCS Nursery at Ellsbury, Missouri. That supply will be distributed to McLean, Livingston, and Ford counties for planting on hill land or eroded areas for soil conservation and production of posts and timber. 50 years ago in 1975, the Bloomington City Council will take initial steps tonight toward regulating setup clubs, such as the one in which 2 persons were shot early Saturday. The city has no regulations governing setup clubs, establishes at which patrons furnish their own liquor, and the club furnishes the mix, ice water, and glasses for drinks. 25 years ago, in the year 2000, the Village of Hayworth has offered $1.5 million to settle a lawsuit with the Hayworth School District that some say has the two sides paying more than $100,000 in attorney's fees. At issue is the village's desire to create a tax increment financing district on prime farmland in the southwest part of town, bordered by U.S. 136 and U.S. 51. It would be the town's 4th TIF district. And then the Veterans Corner. VA phasing out gender dysphoria treatment. The VA announced this week that in response to an executive order, it will phase out medical treatments for gender dysphoria. According to the VA, all savings that VA achieves by stopping specific medical treatments for gender dysphoria will be redirected to help severely injured VA beneficiaries such as paralyzed veterans and amputees regain their independence. Effective immediately, the VA will not offer cross-sex hormone therapy to veterans who have a current diagnosis or history of or exhibit symptoms consistent with gender dysphoria, unless such veterans are already receiving such care from VA, or such veterans are receiving such care from the military as part of and upon their separation from military service, and they are eligible for VA health care. Veterans who do not meet the criteria above are not eligible for cross-sex hormone therapy through VA health care. VA will not provide any other medical or surgical therapy for gender dysphoria to any patients in any circumstance. Until recently, the VA had been promoting an array of services designing to help veterans attempt to change their sex, including cross-sex hormone therapy, voice and communication training, and gender-affirming prosthetics. You can visit news.va.gov/press-room/VA-2-phase-out-treatment-for-gender-dysphoria for more information about the impact of this policy change. Did you know? The 21-gun salute is one of the highest military honors performed for dignitaries, heads of state, and fallen service members. But what exactly is it, and why 21? In military tradition, guns refer to artillery or cannons, not rifles. It is different from the three-volley salute seen at military funerals, where a rifle party fires three rounds in succession. There is no set number of rifles that must fire the three-round volley, only that three rounds are fired. A 21-gun salute is believed to have originated in naval practices, where a ship entering a port would fire its guns, or cannons, three times to let the port know that the ship meant no hostile intent. Most ships had seven cannons, with the firing of three rounds, each for a total of 21 shots fired. The port would then respond by offering three shots from seven of its cannons, totaling 21. In 1818, U.S. naval regulations were the first written instruction on the 21-gun salute, outlining the procedures for a presidential visit aboard a ship, according to the U.S. Navy. When you attend military or veteran events, under arms, observe and appreciate the rifle salute and tradition from which it originated. Requirements for enlistment continue to stiffen. Every branch of the military sets its own standards for enlisting in the military. U.S. citizens and some non-citizens can join the military. If you are not a U.S. citizen, you must have a U.S. permanent resident card, known as a green card, and speak, read, and write English fluently. You cannot join the military to enter the U.S. or to get a visa. Each branch of the military has age limits to enlist in active duty. Air Force 17 to 42, Army 17 to 35, Coast Guard 17 to 41, Marine Corps 17 to 41, and the Navy 17 to 41. The Space Force 17 to 42. There are very limited exceptions to the age requirements, with all the exceptions allowing older enlistment, not younger. There are education and testing requirements such as the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, and you must have a high school or general equivalency diploma. There are fewer spots in the military for GED holders. If you have a GED, you will have a better chance of joining if you have earned college credits or if you scored higher on the ASVAB. A medical exam will determine if the enlistee meets the standards of health and fitness requirements before entering military service. Each branch has physical fitness designed to meet the needs of that branch of service. These current requirements to enter the military service are quite different compared to the standards that were used when there were less technology involved and where the need to expand the numbers serving resulted in the draft. Those who have served in the military have always been considered America's best and brightest. Those serving this nation continue to meet the standards of excellence. That's all we have time for in part one. Please stay tuned for part two of the pantograph from Bloomington Normal.